Welcome to Beyond the Course. I am Jake Hauer, and today with me is Tom Hobbs from Flushing It.
Hey, Jake, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Now, I'm in Melbourne, a cloudy and wet Melbourne, and you're over in the UK, Southampton, I believe.
That's right, yeah. It's quite sunny, actually, at the moment. It's been a very pleasant day indeed.
That would be fairly unusual for you over there, is it?
It is, yeah. It's been a very cold and a damp start for the year, so it feels like maybe summer's coming, finally.
Our listener has been in and around the golf social media space for any length of time. They most likely have come across Flushing It Golf, which has become a little bit of a phenomenon. From my research, it looked like you started the account back in April 21, maybe started posting around that sort of May time. What brought you to start Flushing It?
To be honest, I've always been obsessed with golf, and I just wanted to stay in it while I wasn't playing very much. I had a football account, which I used to like post memes and stuff on up to 2021. And then I just figured, well, I wanted to do that with golf, and because there wasn't too many sort of golf accounts around like that. So I started just posting memes, and it was just really just to have a laugh. And I had a bit of an ambition to try and get more kids into it. So I thought like popping those things up on Instagram would be fun. So I did that for a bit. And then I realized there was loads of golf meme accounts about. So I started talking more about the stories in golf and stuff that I felt really passionate about. And then obviously the lift stuff happened and just things went crazy because I guess I just offer a different opinion. I cut through sort of the noise and get straight to the point of what I'm thinking. And I think a lot of people agree with a lot of what I've had to say. So it seems to have taken off since then.
Where was it? So was it Instagram first or was it X or a combination?
I think I did both actually at the same time, but I kind of concentrated on Instagram more because it's really hard to build a following on X, I think. A bit easier, like the hashtags work a bit better. So yeah, I was just doing that. It's difficult to set up a golf account on X, I think, because unless you're one of the big players, like it's really difficult to get a reach, I think.
It certainly seems that way. So in terms of moving that audience from Instagram, did you have any sort of aspirations of turning it into a business at that early stage, or was it more just to keep you entertained?
It's purely, I mean, it still is now. I don't make, apart from the monetization on Twitter, I still don't make any money out of this, so... I just do it just through passion and love of golf, right? So I love playing golf. I don't get to play as much now. I still, in my head, think that I'm going to be, even though I'm nearly 40, that I still think I'm going to be a pro, top level pro someday, but I'm not, obviously. So it's fun to keep you attached to that. So you're talking about the pro level, keeps you somehow connected to the sport in that way. And that's what I enjoy the most, is talking about elite professional golf, because that's what I always wanted to be as a kid. So it keeps that passion burning, even though there's zero chance that I'm ever going to do it now.
You're fairly prolific. I don't spend a lot of time myself on Instagram, but you're posting probably 10 posts a day on average. I would assume that sort of really ramps up over the weekends and the majors as well. How are you just doing all of that manually? Or are you using any sort of scheduling tools? Or
I literally just do it almost just with me and my iPhone. It's a lot of the time I'll be at work and I'll have a couple of hours free and I'll just quickly flick through the news cycle and like aggregate some stories or throw some opinions out there. There's a lot of the time, you probably notice that I do occasionally just shit post because I'll just be flicking through Twitter and I think, do you know what, I'll just post a meme for no reason. And then you do and it either hits or it doesn't. So yeah, I'll just post whatever I think's fun and whatever I think people are going to want to engage with. That's pretty much the only goal, is to keep people looking at the account and agreeing with things or just getting involved and talking about golf, because we all love it, right? It's just an obsessive sport and we all have a big passion for it.
It's certainly obsessive and can be a little bit counterproductive if you're not supposed to be spending so much time on it.
That's very true, yeah.
Do you have any plans of monetizing it further at all, or is it more just to keep you entertained, a little bit of a side hobby for you?
Another good question, Jade. I don't know, to be honest, because things have developed like real quick with this, because obviously you've just brought up that it's only been going about 3 years, and the way it's modified and morphed from being a meme account to just now like breaking obviously the John Rahm story is crazy. Like that was the biggest story in golf last year, and I had that 2 weeks before anyone else, and that kind of makes you think that there is potential for it. But I just don't really like the idea of like being a journalist or anything like that. So even though I don't really have any desires to make that sort of the whole account, it's just it's at the moment I think just keep doing what I'm doing, just enjoying it, because I don't want it to turn into a job, because it's a good outlet for me when life can get a bit on top of you sometimes. So I can get into that and just talk about golf, and it takes you away from any work and all that crap. So
I think one in an article I think I read earlier, you mentioned you call yourself fan media versus journalism. How would you define fan media versus journalism?
Fan media is more like, I think it's more authentic and it's more like giving your opinion on things rather and not being like a columnist, which is more sort of journalism, which is you give context and background to stuff. Like I will just give my opinion, which may not be entirely balanced sometimes. I try to be balanced, but it's not always. I can like say that I love a player and talk about like someone doing really well, like set up a Victor Hovland, if he's playing really well, I can like almost fanboy that and that's acceptable. But you can't really do that if you're a journalist. So I think there's quite a big distinction there. And you can also be a bit more like risky and say some things which you definitely can't do if it's your job and you're a proper journalist.
Do you think as you get bigger, you've got a responsibility to follow some of the journalism practices, or do you think you can just stay in your lane, be that fan media style and continue to shitpost?
100% think that you need to be more legit and like definitely not try to, what's the word? Like, I don't really know how to describe it, but I really want to make sure that what I'm saying is factual. Like obviously having an opinion and like fanboying a player or whatever is cool, but there's no way I wouldn't like just make up a story like just for the sake of engagement, right? Because that's just insane. There is a responsibility for that, and it came to a head last year when those court documents of the PGA Tour became public, and I wrote a big post about what happened with the European Tour group and how they had effectively been bought out by Pontevedra and their intentions for the tour going forward. I was really concerned about posting that, so I checked everything to make sure it was right, and it turns out that it was all true, that everything I was saying has come to fruition. So that's been quite nice. But I think in general, my track record was pretty good for sort of news stories as well. I don't think I've got a hell of a lot wrong. I've certainly been pretty hot on the lift subject.
As we stand here, which platform do you think is the most effective for you?
It's got to be X. It just feels like more of a media hub, if you know what I mean. It's great for picking up news stories. It's great for getting things out there really quick. Like the John Rahm thing, when I posted about that, it gets like 2 million impressions in an hour. But that wouldn't happen on Instagram because it has to be picked up by the algorithm on Instagram. Whereas X is much more authentic and natural, and retweets and shares and comments directly affect the engagement. Whereas Instagram kind of has to wait to be picked up by the algo, and that might take a day or whatever. So if you want to get a news story out there real quick, X is definitely the place to do it.
Seems to be that it's a good sort of spot to have more in-depth, even though you're limited to 280 sort of characters. You can get more context around subjects and topics, just the way the platform works. Whereas like an Instagram, from my perspective, is more of a broadcast platform, and then you might have a little bit of interaction on that direct post. X, people can comment on a situation and doesn't have to be all focused on one sort of spot, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But you can obviously go more than 280 characters now, and you can always write news articles if you want to, or upload an hour-long video or podcast or interview or something. So it's bringing all the social media platforms into one place. And yeah, I think X is going to be the future of that type of thing. So certainly for news, the news cycle is so quick on X. I love it. It's great to just pick up stories and aggregate things that other people are saying.
Looking at X then a little bit further, was there any particular point in time where it just clicked on X for you? You had a real surge in sort of followers or in interaction? Or
pretty much just on Liv. So when Liv started in 2020, it had like 1,500 followers or something. And I just started defending the right for Liv to exist because I could see the positives with it. And then certainly defending all like a lot of my favourite players, like the European Ryder Cup side players, like went on to Liv. So I didn't like the fact that I thought they were being harassed about making a business decision for their lives. Like it was being made out to be something that it really isn't. And that's, you know, I felt like I was given a different opinion, which people could resonate with, because it was all coming one way from the media. And it was all about how bad Liv is and how bad it is for golf and how these people sell out, etc. And I felt differently, and I'm quite opinionated, and I would put that opinion out there and people would resonate with it. And some people would just interact because they hated my opinion. So they would like just always comment and just give me shit. And that kind of is how it blew up, I think, really, because I remember, I think it went to, I did just before the US Open, and then I had like 6K in the Open week. So that's in like less than 2 months it blew up. And then I don't know, even though I've got now like 55K or something. Yeah, I think it was generally all about the live discussion, and people wanted to hear what people were saying. And you had so many people on one side of the argument, I was the opposite, right? And that's why I think it blew up on there.
Just looking at your sort of follower stats and growth, it looks like around Masters in 22, you have a little spike. And then again, as you say,
Masters Week. It's crazy.
Looking at Google Trends or whatever, it just blows everything else away. Nothing comes close. Masters is pretty much when the world tunes in.
Yeah, exactly.
Growth numbers seem to spike around majors, but as you see, around that sort of June, July period of 22, there's a real spike, which is when LIV started. And then like, probably your biggest week in terms of growth was September, October last year and June.
June last year, that would have been around the framework agreement time, I assume.
Yep.
And then that was as well when the court documents came out. And I wrote quite a big post about that and dissected it all down. And other media weren't doing that at the time because they were a bit scared about the legal comeuppance of that. And I didn't have that fear. So I put it out and a lot of people wanted to read what I was saying about that. So yeah, that kind of makes sense.
One thing I've noticed with X is that get engagement, it seems that you need to hit both sides of an argument. You need to either have people 100% defending you and your position. And on the flip side, you need people who just disagree 100%. It seems that if you're anywhere in the middle, it doesn't get as much engagement.
It's interesting though, because you see these accounts, like say, is it T-U-O-R Golf? And he'll just put out like a made up quote that's really offensive. And it gets like 5 million interactions in like a day. And that's how X works, because there'll be so many people quote tweeting that and giving their opinion one way or the other or commenting on it. And that's how it gets so many impressions. So it goes a bit clickbaity.
That's, I guess, how accounts grow though, really, isn't it? It's like if X is not really a platform for a centered view, because it just, you're just almost broadcasting to an empty hall. When you're the voice of reason, no one sort of interacts.
Well, that's exactly right. And my growth has slowed down, I think, the last few months, because I've been a bit more central and haven't been shouting as much about my opinions on LIV, because things just seem like they're coming together. So there's no need to do that. And it definitely has slowed down. So yeah, I think you're right with that. But that's just the way social media works, isn't it? And it's why we have such a fractured society and why this like LIV debate has become so hot. It's because you have to be one side or the other. And if I wrote anything critical about LIV, I get all the LIV fans like give me shit about that. I even get LIV staff get upset with me about it. And if you write anything like positive about LIV, everyone just tells me I'm a paid shill. So you just can't win. It doesn't matter. People have their perception of what you are. And yeah, you just can't win. But LIV is always a hot subject. If you want engagement, just post something crazy about LIV.
That's what I've seen, the exact same thing happen. And so here's a question I'd pose. Going back, if you're starting again, would you incite that sort of controversy by focusing on LIV to grow?
I haven't really concentrated on growing, to be honest. I've just said what I say. And I think that's part of why it has grown so well, is because it is authentic. I'm a tradesman. I'm not a golf writer. I'm not looking to make money out of this. I just give that bloke in the pub sort of opinion. I think a lot of people can engage and agree with a lot of what I'm saying, because it is like that. When you give an opinion which is very direct, I'm quite good at cutting through the noise and just going straight to the point and keeping it short and snappy. I think that's how news and stuff is digested now as well. People don't want to read a massive article. They want to see a very quick tweet about what's happening and straight to the point. So if you're looking for advice on how to sort of grow your platform, I would say that positivity actually seems to win quite a lot. Finding cool news stories which people just like, oh, this is amazing, share to their mates or whatever, seems to do quite well. Look at the Monday Q Info. All he's doing is just finding amazing positive stories and people have worked their whole lives to be professional golfers. He does really well, doesn't he? And he's a fantastic follow.
In terms of building an engaged audience, that's probably a really good point, because negativity might get you impressions and whatnot, but it doesn't get you sort of true fans outside of the people who agree with what you're saying.
And it's also bad energy, isn't it? Like, just, I've noticed that, like, there's some things I wanted to say recently, which I just haven't pulled the trigger on posting it, because I've just been like, I just can't be arsed with this. I just don't need the negative energy in my life.
I think there's also like, X is a place for me. I go there as an outlet of sorts. So it is a place I'm happy to shitpost a little bit.
Yeah.
Half of what I say on X, like, I don't necessarily 100% agree. They might have some truth in it, but it's not something that you'd sit down and have a conversation and I'd be. So it's almost, it is taking the piss a little bit on X, but that's just to keep things interesting and to try and garner that engagement a little bit.
Some wild takes every now and then.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. It's no fun if you don't do that.
No, correct. Now, you've periodically posted a podcast. How is the sort of feedback on that? How have you found that?
Feedback's been fine. The sound quality is terrible and the picture quality is terrible as well. Like, I never really had any interest in doing a podcast, but then I kept having the opportunity to speak to some really cool names. And if you go through that list, it's quite a who's who of, well, certainly Live names. And yeah, if you have the opportunity to talk to people like that, that's just the reason why I got into it. But unless there's someone that's desperate to do an interview with me, I'm not going out of my way to continue it. It's not like I feel like I have to post regularly or anything. I tried to do something with my brother and we just didn't have the time to do the analysis of golf. It takes so much time. When you've got a young family and a job, you just think, is it worth it? Like, why am I doing this? I do enjoy it, but there's so much behind the scenes that goes into it that you just don't have the time for it.
What about website?
I have considered it, not for very long, but yeah, it all just comes down to what am I trying to do with this, right? And it's, and at the moment, I just, it's literally just, yeah, I'm not looking at it as a business opportunity at the moment, but there certainly are some things I can do in the future. And maybe it's when this has all died down a little bit, that might be something I look into. Like, there is a place for that type of media and bridging the gap between established media and fan media, I think is quite important because it makes it more authentic. And we cover news stories which sometimes the established press aren't keen to touch on because it might be too risky. So I think there is definitely a place for it.
Flushing It and Flushing It Golf.com were both registered in around November last year. Was that you or is someone squatting on those domains?
Decided to take an opportunity. Fair play to him. I did not know that was gone.
That's really funny. What's in terms of, have you had people come to you and offer you opportunities to monetize it at all?
There's been a few, I won't go into specifics, but yeah, a few people have asked for like advertising things, like to advertise on the podcast or whatever. And people like asking for partnerships, if I wanted to be paid to go on their podcast and interview players for them or like be part of their network or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things at the moment. Just really don't have any interest in monetizing it at the moment. So it's just doing it for a laugh. So yeah, I've rejected everything. I've had no adverts, as you can tell, on my feed at all. I literally just make like whatever it is, like $150 a month from the blue check mark. And I didn't even do that. I didn't get the blue check mark for that. I wanted to be able to post longer and be able to edit the posts.
Longer posts.
So it just was a byproduct, which, yeah, I'm not going to complain about it.
You've been really consistent with posting. It takes a lot of time and effort. Obviously, you really enjoy it.
It's just, I've always enjoyed writing, and obviously golf is my passion, and trying to find and build narratives around a player or a storyline is, I really enjoy it. And it's also fascinating to see like how you can start a news cycle. Like, it's just me on my phone at work, right? Just like flicking through some posts and finding a story to aggregate. And then before it's been picked up by like Golf Digest and Golf Monthly and stuff, and it becomes like a big deal. And that's been absolutely fascinating to watch happen.
How do you, when you see something take off that you've posted and which maybe is getting towards the edges of being controversial, do you find you need to follow it up and do you go down that sort of route again? Or are you able to have an internal conversation and say, no, I'm getting a little bit off track here. I need to come back to where I believe I should be and not worry about the engagement and the reach and whatever.
I don't think I've done that too much. It's developed. I used to do that a lot when they first started up, which is like post a controversial thing and really just try and wind people up. Just being a wind up merchant because that was good fun at the time. I tend to not really do that anymore. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, I just want it to be a platform where everyone that loves golf just comes to like took it news, right? So you talk about the PGA Tour, you talk about the LET, you talk about the LPGA, you talk about the Sunshine Tour, Asian Tour, Live, whatever. And like, I just want it to be like a place where everyone who just loves golf just comes to get the news and see some views.
Is that changing, do you think? Because I would have said that Flushing It initially was Live-centric. Have you found it hard to move the sort of the understanding of what the brand is to being more golf?
It was quite Live-centric, but there was, I think I was, the first two, like I say, the first 2 years of like when Live came up, certainly into probably the end of last year, I was just feeling a void, like because people weren't, no one was like communicating what was actually happening at Live. And certainly things about the Asian Tour and like the money they'd invested, that was a story that I really wanted to tell and to push. And but there was like no real, there was hardly any journalists apart from the first one going to Live events. So they weren't picking up all these stories. So I just felt like it was my place to inform the golf fans what was going on. So I used to ask a million questions to like the Live communication team about what was happening and they would be candid with their answers. So I would just put it out there, right? And just explain what was actually happening and this is how the league works and this is what's going on behind the scenes. And it made me look like I was somehow an insider, but I wasn't. I was just asking the questions that other journalists weren't asking to the communication team from Live and they've been very helpful. So yeah, it's just, I do agree with you that it certainly was a bit Live-centric and I have consciously tried to like bring that back to the center. And yeah, I think that I hope now that people look at it and see that I'm certainly been a lot more constructive and like with criticism and stuff of the league, and like calling out things when I see it, because there is a lot of, obviously they don't do everything right, but just because I agree with what they in principle are trying to achieve, that doesn't mean they do everything right, and you have to be balanced and like criticize just like I would do any other tour.
I think the other thing is, so I was used social really as more of a passive, I can consume news and to speak to friends and whatnot on it. One thing that I found, particularly with Liv and being an Aussie and having a different perspective and a different outlook on both Saudi and just golf in general, and seeing that professional golf has been destroyed outside of the US, one thing that sort of pulled me towards posting and speaking about Liv as a topic was just trying to counter some of the US sort of opinion and reporting on it. It just seems so one-sided and lacking any sort of perspective outside of their own sort of...
100%. And that's what they fail to see that sometimes, because it's such an...
Yeah.
Like they just look, it's such an insular almost attitude from the PGA Tour, and also the PGA Tour, what the media which go to all their events see it that way as well. And it was important to have a strong international voice that does that kind of thing, because the majority of like this, like no laying up, calling themselves fan analysts, right? They try to be a bit more global with their opinions, but it's very US centric. And yeah, like pretty much all of those types of things, like the shotgun start, really good. But again, it's very US centric. So I thought it was important to have someone that talked more about international golf. And certainly like what's happening in Australia is a big positive to me. And that's why I see the disruption phase that's happened is only going to help the game around the world, because like the PGA Tour were very clearly trying to monopolize everything towards the States. And you can see that with what they have done with the European Tour, how they've suffocated international tours like the Australasian PGA Tour or the Sunshine Tour or whatever. So they've become literally a blip of what they formerly were. And that's exactly what they're trying to do with the European Tour. And I think that you had to have this disruption. It took like a public wealth fund with billions and billions of dollars to spend, and someone like Greg Norman, who just didn't give a shit what the establishment said. It had to happen like that, because you've seen the pushback against him. No one else like would have been able to get this off the ground, I don't think. You had to be that stubborn and that brave and that single-minded just to be able to get to where they are now.
I've been in golf since 2015 is when I started playing, and at that time, you'd switch on over night time at about sort of 8, 9 p.m. I'd be able to watch the European Tour. I'd watch a decent course. I'd watch a pretty strong field. Wake up in the morning, I'd watch the PGA Tour. But that's over, particularly COVID really fast-tracked it. But trying to watch the European Tour now, it's a shell of its previous self. And everything is centered around the US. So it was something I'd almost resigned to, the fact that, well, this is the way it is. The money is in the US. That's where it's going to stay. But the PIF has presented an opportunity to level the playing field again, I think.
Yeah, they have, definitely. And I just hope that with what I can see happening, because obviously Liv's not going away, it'd be pretty obvious now to everybody that all these calls that Liv was going to disappear at the end of last year just hadn't happened, and then it's going from strength to strength. I can see there being two tours. The PGA Tour stays US-based and has the US TV rights, and the majority of the American players play there. And then you have Liv maybe form somehow a schedule be built around, obviously around the world, but somehow incorporating like European Tour events and stuff. Yeah, that's what I think there should be. It's like a world tour, and the American Tour can stay doing whatever they want because that's what they want to do. But you have to have this world tour, I believe, to take the sport forwards. And whether it incorporates like national opens or it stays with the Liv format, I don't think it matters too much, because as long as it's getting those players into those regions so that like golfers can see them in the flesh, I think that's just a really big positive for the sport.
What would be your ideal outcome from where we are now?
Pretty much that, to be honest. I think Liv should maybe drop the amount of events they have for this team competition and make it like almost like cricket with the IPL windows, where they have the team events, a direct head-to-head match play, but in two different windows. And then they like incorporate, say, the South African Australian Opens, like all that sort of thing into a established tour schedule. Because then that sorts out all the major access, all the age points and everything, because they can play proper established golf. But then they also have this direct, like solely team-based events as well, which is where the value is in the franchise models, because I just don't think that the way they're doing it at the moment really works, because it's kind of like a bolt-on. And if they're going to be a team event, it should be all about the team event. And the playoff in Adelaide, how good was that? Like when you had the Australian team going up against the Saffirs, and it was like direct head-to-head with a home crowd. It was fantastic. And if they can try to recreate that with direct head-to-head match play, I think that's where the future lies within the team golf. What do you think of that?
I'm probably lean more towards where Formula One is, where the team aspect is big, but it's not entirely important in terms of, so you have fans who will maybe align with the team and they'll just follow that team regardless, or you have some fans who will align with a particular driver and then they might follow that driver across different teams. Like for me, Ricardo was a big one, and before him, Mark Webber, I used to follow quite a lot, and they were both sort of Red Bull, but I followed Ricardo across to McLaren and whatnot. And so my team alliance wasn't as strong as my driver alliance. And then you have the Constructors' Championship, but the main focus is still the driver, the individual standings. And I think that's probably similar with golf because it is an individual sport still. And where I struggle on breaking out the team into its own thing is that I don't see that potentially having great finishes all the time. Like we might see some huge blowouts. And if that's the case, if that becomes the norm, how interesting is it?
That's what they're trying to achieve is the F1 model, isn't it? You can see that the way they've set up the whole league itself, the way they have the leaderboard with the pylon and stuff is almost exactly like F1. So yeah, you're probably right. That's probably exactly what they're trying to do. But I'm not entirely sure how much I buy into that because the team thing, unless it's head-to-head, I just 2 years in, I still haven't really paid much attention to it apart from when they had that playoff in Australia.
That's where you stance. Because until we get in a bit of player movement and maybe a salary cap of some description, I don't think it's really hard to follow the team stuff. Even watching it in an event, you really can't look at it until the last four or five holes because it's so volatile. There's such big movements.
It's so true. And even with the four players counting on Sundays as well, you get some massive moves right at the end. I'm really struggling to buy into it, but I think the trade windows, like you were just saying, and the salary caps, like that's a huge part. They have to get that off the ground because at the moment, like the mid-season transfer window was just completely non-existent. And I know that there was a team that asked to extend a contract of a player, but they had to get permission of the league, and the league said no. So once like the league sells their 75% stakeholding or 100% stakeholding of the teams, then and they're actually trying to make a profit, and they're making these decisions based around like actually being a profitable company and a profitable franchise, I think that's when the team aspect maybe will flourish. But at the moment, it's just not doing it for me. But
that to me is what they have to do if they really want the team aspect to work. Because until you start seeing that sort of competition for players, some actual true competition for players, and that sort of movement, it's very hard to get invested in it. Like,
yeah, it really is.
The other thing I think, if you start getting to see these sort of trades. So here in the AFL, trade periods are huge business. There's lots of commentary, lots of media that focus just on the trade period itself. And I think it's very similar in football as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to be talking about transfers and rumours and stuff about Liv. Like I tried to find as many rumours and storylines as I could during the trade window, but there just wasn't any. So like the first four teams that I asked on the first day after the window was announced, they all said, oh no, we're not making any changes. So it's just like, well, this is already a dud for me. But if there was speculation and you can like throw out some things that there might potentially be a move from whoever, like say, I don't know, one of the Majestics guys isn't happy because they're at the bottom of the table and he wants to leave and go to wherever, like that would be quite fun to talk about. Yeah, it's just not really taken off at the moment, is it? So we have to see what the future holds.
There's a bit of work to be done there. US Open pick?
I'm going to pick Cam. I don't like his form coming in, but he just looks like he's going to relish this challenge. And I think if the winning score is around level par, I think it could be Cam's. But I was talking to a lot of players who were saying that they think there's going to be a lot of luck involved. So it could be a surprise winner as well. There could be someone random because like if you hit it into that scrub, like you have to just consistently get lucky with the lies. So yeah, we could see someone outside of what people are expecting win this event.
I think so. And the other thing that I think is going to be interesting to watch will be seeing how differently they play the course with the additional distance that is on tour since 2014. Looking at the course itself, I can't see any disadvantage in some of the really long guys being really aggressive, getting as close as they can to the green. And then I think it just improves their chances regardless of where they are of keeping something on the green for their second shot.
I agree with that. It's very similar to what Bryson is. I spoke to Bryson and Greg Bedeen is
yeah.
earlier, and he was just saying like there's going to be so much luck involved, like win those lies, that you might as well just get as close as you can, and then you can help loft the ball up a bit more, which helps you stop it on the upturned saucers. So I think you could be right. Just someone who really sends it and gets it down there, they could have a big week.
Based on that, and based on leaving the ball in good miss positions where you could potentially take out wedge and muse putter or a more de-lofted club, I'm picking Victor Hovland.
Oh, good. I would love it. Yeah. He looked like he was grinding a bit, though, too much for me. But I would love it if he played well.
Take the wedge out of his hands. Maybe get a putter in his hand. He's a decent putter. Obviously, he's a world-class driver. He's quite accurate. Hopefully, he surprises.
Yeah, definitely. That would be great.
All right, Tom. Great chatting.
Sam, cheers, Jake. Speak to you soon.